Welcome to Public Eye Podcasts, interviews with contributors to Public Eye Magazine, broadcast through our website. I'm Abby Scher, editor of Public Eye, and with me is Spencer Sunshine, contributing editor to the magazine Fifth Estate, who's written a fascinating cover story for Public Eye about fascists who make a point of looking like left-wing anarchists.
Hi, Abby.
Hi, Spencer. So tell me, who are these people?
They're a group in the English-speaking world called National Anarchists, and they're a interesting outgrowth of a far-flung wing of the European fascist tradition that are sometimes called left fascists. They draw upon certain heterodox traditions within the fascist political movement. And recently, they've been adopting some stances that are close to left-wing anarchism, but are an adaptation of fascism. But more in particular, they've adopted a lot of the symbols and the styles of anarchists, of the kind of anarchists that we've seen in Western Europe and the United States. Most prominent of this is that they dress like anarchists in black hoodies, and they go to demonstrations, anti-globalization demonstrations in particular, and they march in black blocks, which are these blocks of people all dressed in black. And then carrying anti-globalization slogans and banners. And so they've adopted the signs and the symbols and the political tactics of the left-wing anarchist movement while they still keep the core fascist values that they've emerged from.
Well, what makes them fascist?
Well, the core value that they keep is that they're ethnic separatists. Fascism, or at least the Nazi style of fascism, was a German supremacist. It was an Aryan supremacist movement. More recently, in the 70s and 80s, we've seen a move away from these supremacist ideologies into racial separatist ideologies. We saw this very strongly in the United States with something called the Northwest Imperative, in which American neo-Nazis and other far-right types attempted to establish a white state in the Northwest. This group, the National Anarchists, have a version of this, and what they want to do is have a series of ethnically segregated villages without a state. So everybody is going to live in their own village according to their ethnic background. And they also want to make this even more distinct by having queer people live in their own villages too. So everyone who's going to has to identify with their very particular identity, and then they're going to live in their own particular geographic space.
Well, how does white supremacy get tangled up in that?
What this is actually an outgrowth of white supremacy, with especially in the United States, with the failure of the right to uphold segregation and the movement towards a globalized and multiracial world. People who in the past held white supremacist views have backpedaled a lot, and this is the position that they backpedaled to, in which they are trying to preserve a white identity. And they feel like they need to preserve it not just by having that identity in a culture, but by being geographically separate and homogenous. And so this is a sort of like last-ditch effort in order to preserve this.
Well, why is the anarchist imagery so powerful?
Well, on the left, with the collapse of the Soviet Union, in the 60s, many people, radical youth who became radicalized and involved in the left often were drawn towards Marxist-Leninist groups, communist groups of one sort or another. Especially with the collapse of the Soviet Union, but also with the rise of other factors like the importance of ecology, which Marxism has never been able to deal with very well. Most younger people who get involved in the radical left move towards the anarchist movement. Certainly in increasing numbers they do, and anarchists have become much more visible with demonstrations, especially involving the anti-globalization movement, which we saw in Seattle in 1999. Right now we're seeing it in Greece with all the uprisings, which seem to be led or catalyzed by anarchists. So anarchists are very prominent. It's a very media-friendly imagery, especially the more militant tactics that are used at demonstrations. And so it's much more popular than, say, the old communist movement was for youth of today.
What about this question of the right wooing the left? Do they actually want to attract left-wing anarchists to their movement?
Yes, and there's been a number of isolated individuals who've been attracted to their movement. I'd like to stress that all known left-wing, and this word's a little debated, but what we would generally consider to be left-wing anarchist groups have repudiated the National Anarchists. They're quite well hated. But there are, of course, as there are in all progressive political movements, people who personally hold reactionary ideas, and several of these individuals have gone over to them. the National Anarchists actually seem to have a two-pronged strategy to attempt to recruit both from the far right as well as the far left. So at one time, at one point, they're trying to woo leftists, anarchists, and communists. And on the other hand, they're trying to woo traditional racist rightists, especially the British National Party. Troy Southgate, the leading English language ideologue of the National Anarchists, has said that he hopes to influence the rank and file of the British National Party and bring them over to his ideology.
So is this active in the United States? Is it most active in Europe? Where are we seeing this?
This is an outgrowth of a larger tradition that starts after the 60s in Europe that are sometimes called left fascists. We haven't seen very much of it in the English-speaking world until recently. This ideology is sort of congealed in the English-speaking world in the late 90s around a figure named Troy Southgate in England. It's spread to Australia, where we saw black blocs recently at an anti-globalization demonstration. And more recently, there's a group congealing in the Bay Area that's doing demonstrations, as well as individuals that are scattered around and often run websites in an attempt to spread their ideas.
Are they spreading in the United States? Is there a real threat of a fusion of left and fascist politics in the Bay Area? Or
I don't think that there's a threat. Certainly, it's not a numerical threat at this point. What's interesting is its potential. In other places, groups with similar politics like this, such as the National Bolsheviks, have become a threat and have basically taken the ground that the left has held. This isn't going to happen right now in the U.S. The groups aren't very big in the U.S. What has happened over several years is that the growth of this in the English-speaking world hasn't stopped. It's continued to increase, which is one of the more worrisome things. People thought it would be a flash in the pan around 2001, but it's very slowly continued to spread and creep around. I mean, I worry that in 10 or 15 years that the groups that are working now will have seeded their ideas out. And so in the future, there might be a much greater potential for the right to make a grab. And this particular kind of right, because this is very different than, say, the Christian right, the neo-fascist right is an anti-liberal movement that's against capitalism, that they may be in a better position to take the ground that the left currently has. And this has happened elsewhere.
So we're in the middle of an economic crisis. We have economic meltdown going on. People tend to see the growth of the fascist movement as in the 20s and 30s as capitalizing on economic chaos. How do these people view capitalism and economic crisis?
Well, I think both the left and the right, the radical right and the radical left, see the crisis in capitalism as an opportunity. Just as people in the 30s did, there was the growth of the emergence and growth of the fascist movement, but there was also, this was the time that the communist movement in the United States was at its height. And so this is likely to be a time of growth both for the anti-capitalist left and right, and they will face off against each other as well as against the liberal center that's tied to capitalism. The left fascists in particular dislike capitalism. They see capitalism as tied to Judaism. They see capitalism as tied to modernity. Their interest is in creating or recreating a mythic idea of the nation or the race or your particular ethnic group that's going to be reborn into a new homogeneous, cohesive, and myth-driven society. And in a sense, they really have no truck with capitalism. They're not interested in capitalism. Some leftists see fascism as a sort of tool to save capitalism. And although that did seem to be the case when Hitler actually took power, these people draw their inspiration from the sort of left wing of the Nazi. One of their inspirations is from the left wing of the Nazi movement around people like Otto Strasser, who actually broke with Hitler because Strasser saw Hitler as too tied to the capitalists. So they're not actually interested in capitalism. They want to see small-scale, tightly-knit villages and look more towards old crafts economy. In some ways, they're much more related to the kind of craft socialism that people saw in England in the 1800s.
One of the fascinating parts of your article was the influence on intellectuals. So we've been talking thus far about movements, grassroots movements, but in your article, you discuss Telos as a journal based in New York, I guess, that was progressive and was wooed by some of these ideas.
The influence here is of something that's the European New Right. The European New Right is quite different than the U.S. New Right. They are anti-consumer society. They are pro-ecological. They're often anti-Christian. They want a revival of a sort of pagan Europe. Their main intellectual is a man named Alain de Benoist. They have had an interesting influence in the U.S., both on the left and the right. On one hand, a journal called Telos, which was important in spreading Western Marxist ideas into the English language in the 70s and 80s, started printing de Benoist's work in the early 90s, which caused dissent among the editorial collective. And they continue to print some of his works, I believe. And they've also, the French New Right has also influenced the paleoconservative right, the Chronicles, a magazine which is published by the Rockford Institute, publishes Tomislav Sunik, who wrote Against Equality, Against Democracy. And this circle has had influences on people like Pat Buchanan. So they're in a very, the French New Right, which is one of the main influences for the National Anarchists, has influenced both the paleoconservative right and the intellectual new left in the U.S. It's a very odd kind of arrangement of things.
So how are anti-authoritarians in the United States and Europe responding to this configuration?
Well, this configuration is part of a larger movement, not just of left fascists who are moving, who are incorporating a lot of left-wing elements, but of the fascist movement in general in order that is adopting left-wing and anarchist symbolism. The main example of this is in Germany. Is a group called the Autonomous Nationalists who are marching in these very large black blocs with hundreds of people at demonstrations. They'll invert symbolism. They'll actually use the symbols of the anti-fascists on their own banners, and they'll claim that, for example, the socialists are the fascists, and therefore they're anti-fascists, or the PDS, or which is now the Linkspartei, the left party in Germany, are the fascists, and so they're anti-fascist. So there's been a wave of this inversion of symbolism. Although they're not directly tied to the National Anarchists, although the main Australian National Anarchist does have a background in the circles that the German Autonomous Nationalists are tied to, the National Anarchists are part of this bigger movement to adopt left imagery. You know, anti-fascists and leftists are, to the extent that they're confronted by this, this is sort of a new thing in America, but it has a much longer tradition in Europe. Generally treat these groups as fascist groups. But one of the reasons, for example, that I've written this article is so that people don't, when they encounter these groups, there's a clear understanding about who they are and where they come from. Sometimes when people just run into them, they're like, well, there's many varieties of anarchism. Maybe this is just a new kind of anarchism I haven't heard of. So we want to make it very clear what the views and lineages of these groups are to people.
Thank you, Spencer Sunshine.
Thank you, Abby.
I'm Abby Scher for Public Eye.